don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate. We think too much and feel too little. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness. Without these qualities, life will be violent. All will be lost. Do not despair. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die. And dictators die. And the power they took from the people will return to the people. Will return to the people. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world to do away with greed. Now let us fight to free the world.
Here on Republic Broadcasting. Oh, let's see. It's the 17th of 2015. 17th of February, excuse me. We have a special guest today. Today is a subject, I gotta be honest, it's one of those subjects that is sort of, I won't say it's taboo. There's a lot of gurus out there, a lot of people who suggest that they are experts on the code. We're talking about the income tax code. We're talking about the income tax in general. It's a very, very scary thing to contemplate, and of course most people are not going to spend the time to read the code itself, let alone go through all of the court cases that have to do with that. Now, the reason that I have my guest on today, my guest is David Merlin. Merlin actually has a show on RBN. It airs 6 a.m. in Saturdays, Central Time. It's called No Confidence, which essentially means no trust, and we'll get into why he named his show that at some point in the discussion. But what I like about David is that he sort of got into this game of trying to expose all of this craziness, kind of the same way I did, which was I just happened to document mine. I went and talked to the, you know, when I first learned about the comprehensive annual financial reports, I went and talked to the Comptroller General of the United States, or at least the former Comptroller of the United States, and he lied to me, bold-faced, right in front of everybody. Absolute 100% lie, provably false information, right to my face and right on camera. And that's what I started my first documentary with, was to show this guy absolutely and utterly lying to me. I absolutely despise being lied to, because I strive so hard, as I know a lot of the audience does, to live in a sincerity, in a trust, in a very honest way. And so when you come up against liars that are professional liars, that live in a lie, that their job is to support the lie that is the legal fiction, and of course that includes the the food of the gods that I like to call, well, the food of the magistrates that I like to call the tax, the income tax. It's a vast thing, but it's kind of a similar story with David, where, well, you know, You get something in the mail that says that you owe money to somebody because you made money, therefore you owe it to someone else. And, you know, what do you say? It pisses you off. And for someone like me and for someone like David, when we get pissed off, we go to the source. We say, well, what the hell's going on here? Why is this agent claiming that I owe him money? And unfortunately for the IRS, they messed with the wrong guy. And with that, I'd like to introduce David Merlin.
Well, thanks, Clint. Let's lay out the pudding wherein the proof lies. I have made appearances as an expert witness regarding the content and intent of the tax code, and that was in the mid-90s. And there are a host of things that set me apart from everybody in the quote-unquote movement. I've never really associated with the movement longer than it took to share with them that I have certain materials that I've tried to sell to make a living.
And by the movement, of course, we're talking about the sort of false religious tendencies of the quote-unquote patriot movement, the truth movement, and all those different little movements that never seem to quite work out.
They never seem to move. And what I've seen predominantly, and this really, this strikes at the heart of the reason that you see no movement in the movement, that almost all of it is based on a presumption that enforcement is legitimate. And that leads people to make presumptions that I must have assessed myself. I must have used the zip code. I must have done, there's a whole string of things that from the seemingly possible or plausible to outright fantastic and delusional reasons they give for owing the tax.
Well, and to be clear, you know, when I first talked to you, I don't have a lot of guests on this subject because of the exact thing that you're talking about. There's so many gurus out there that try to sell you their personal opinions about the law while ignoring the opinions of judges, the opinions of the law, the opinions of et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It seems to be that they always want to sell you their own opinion and sort of ignore what the law and what the case law says. And what you said to me struck me as, okay, this guy is going to need to be on the show. You very simply said, look, I'm not trying to, you know, earn you money. I'm not trying to save money or property for you. I'm simply trying to prevent these guys from illegally, unlawfully, unjustly, and without any lawful bounds to put you in jail for something that is as simple as not paying a tax. You're trying to save people not from their participation in what can only be called mammon, the money system. You're trying to prevent absolute tyranny of this agency to put people in jail. And that's really what kind of drew me to you in the first place.
It's not about being right, which is another thing that sets me apart from the movement. I am correct, but I use just the law. I start with the traverse, as I told you, that I am a citizen of the United States because they say I am. And when I acquiesce, when I traverse into that status, and I don't make any other argument that you see in the quote-unquote movement, like voluntary compliance or any of the rest of them, I'm not a non-resident alien, I'm a citizen of the United States. When I do that, I situate myself in an area of argument that everybody has to understand is an area that you go to when you've lost all of your other challenges and you're forced inside the box to argue law like attorneys argue the law. There's a structure to the tax code that reveals itself when you focus on just a few of the needles in the haystack. And everybody should get a pen, piece of paper, to write down a few of the things that I have to share with you today. The website is wevgov.com, short for We the People versus Government, wevgov.com. Everything is on that website for the two arguments that I'll outline for you that exist in tax law, in the Internal Revenue Code, in the box, when you follow. Go ahead.
So in other words, when we get slapped around enough, when we've followed the gurus and we found out that their so-called non-legal advice is actually really a vice against us, when you get to the point where you realize, holy crap, I better settle in and figure out what the hell I'm doing, that's the point where we kind of go to your website and say, okay, this guy kind of has it figured out, because he's not trying to, again, you know, we've talked about this over and over, folks. we are entering into a realm here of a specific legal fiction. And we have to understand that because of our participation as citizens in this fiction, we have to go by their rules. Our opinions, our beliefs, our religious whatever do not matter. Our patriotism goes right out the window. We're not dealing with even hardly the Constitution at this point. We're dealing with something that is a contractual relationship, and therefore contract law applies. And really, what it sounds like you've found, David, is this, that the law is actually quite protective of against the fraud that they're trying to perpetuate, and it seems to me like they're perpetuating their fraud based on non-disclosure of their own code.
Now, I don't teach at all that enforcement is commerce, and I don't teach that you've entered into a contract anywhere along the way, because the first thing the definition of contract will tell you is that it's a meeting of the mind. And so there's no such thing as a secret contract. It's not a contract if it's held against you because you didn't voluntarily enter into it. That's one of the components of what is a contract. But I'd like to back up and put an exclamation point on a point that you started with, which is there comes a time when we have to realize that what we think we know, you know, we have to really get down and operate. We're forced into their rules.
Yes.
And their game. For whatever reason, by whatever nature, you're going to be, you will end up at a point where the law has to be argued, because that's all they're using and that's all they'll allow you to use.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as incompetence, I want to put an exclamation point on that. On December 16th, I think it was, in Anchorage, Alaska, James R. Back, in U.S. District Court, was sentenced to 16 months in prison. He had been making, for several years, $125,000 or more as an Alyeska pipeline technician up there in Alaska. He filed a bunch of Pete Hendrickson tax returns, and he went to prison last December, several months after Pete Hendrickson got out of prison. And what Pete Hendrickson did was get over $11 million worth of refunds back for people by teaching them how to file a certain tax return, filled out a particular way, and he was the fifth person I've seen do that. I could get you your money back on a tax return. 2.5 years later, you'll be liened and levied with penalties and interest, and they'll get the money back from you, plus a bunch of, it's an investment that they make in the movement. When they give a bunch of refunds back, 2.5 years later, they'll go and they'll put a rope around everybody and drag you into the corral and shear you with penalties and interest. They make money by relaxing and giving your money back. And in 2.5 years, they go back and they get it from it.
It's just an investment.
Made. That's all it is. And no. I've seen it happen 5 times. Pete Hendrickson was just the latest. That's all. And so I knew what was going to happen to these people. I don't have the budget to compete with their websites, to compete with the beautiful cover they put on their book. But I, on the other hand, and in the alternative, have prevented over a dozen indictments with a treatise that I wrote in 1994 about the differences between the tax code and the IRS after 5 solid years of research into the differences. I was comparing the standard operating procedure with the language of the tax code, and so I've started in the box and stayed there and turned my back on the movement in 1992 when I saw that all they're good for is a bunch of frivolous filing penalties. So I turned them off and never looked back, and studied just the tax code, comparing it to the IRS, and I found where they're stealing pennies, and I found where they're stealing everything, and arguments all the way in between, everywhere in between. So there's a couple arguments that do the heaviest lifting. You'll see those on wevgov.com. And we'll get into them after the next break. I know you're in a four breaks per hour.
Well, we actually skipped, if I'm correct, we skipped the first break, just at least temporarily. So we've still got another 15 minutes or so. So it's actually kind of nice.
Nice place. Yeah. So looking just at the tax code, the biggest questions are, does the law, not a question of whether or not the federal government can write a law that applies to me. It's whether or not the federal government has written a law that applies to me. See how I just stepped into the box instead of stepping outside to say, you can't, you don't have the authority. I'm a citizen of the state and I'm not a citizen of the United States, and that's not my citizenship in that regulation, and so you're barred from writing in relation to me. Instead, I say, let's look at the law and see if they've even written a law to apply to the citizen they say I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I just pierced the veil into a whole different world of argument where the law, I'm not arguing that they can't write a law that applies to me. I'm arguing that they have not written a law that applies to me. So I look at the tax code, and as you go to wevgov.com, really, there's a world of information there. There's nothing there that you don't need to know, and everything that you need to know to get to a certain point of dominion over a public servant is on the website. On the federal income taxation page of wevgov.com, as you stand back and look at the tax code, there are only four chapters that impose a tax on somebody that only sells their labor or makes capital gains. And that's 99% of Americans, isn't it?
Seems to be.
It's the whole shebang. So the two big questions that come to the top, have they written a law that applies to me? If the answer is no, the whole Internal Revenue Code doesn't apply to me. If the answer is yes, well, all I did was sell my labor. Have they written a law that applies to me? So now I'm inside the tax code for my second argument. If you begin with the first argument, we look at those four chapters, and what I zeroed in on was the definition of citizen in chapters other than Chapter 1. The Social Security Act, 1935, in Section 211 of the Act, has a very specific definition of citizen that says an individual who is not a citizen of the United States, but who is a citizen of the Commonwealth, Puerto Rico, Guam, American Samoa, shall not be considered a non-resident alien individual. And if you're not a non-resident alien individual, that means you're a citizen. So in the Social Security Act, they said, this is the citizen, by naming citizens of the possession. And everywhere you go after that, you find that definition is everywhere. And this was in the original Social Security Act, 1939, tax code, you have Section 3811, collection of taxes in Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. And then we go all the way forward to the 1954 tax code, when they reshuffled the 1939 tax code, made everything seven or eight times longer to complicate the tax code. It was working so well. And you have then the definition of citizen in the Social Security Act is brought forth into the U.S. Code, where they allow for Social Security benefit, not the taxes imposed, but the benefits, and that's 42 U.S.C. 411B2. All of this is on the website, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, Section 411B2 of Title 42 has the same definition of citizen, who is not a non-resident alien individual. Then you have, you get into the tax code. Section 7651 parentheses 4A. It used to be 5A. Now it's 4A, and I'm looking at chapters 2 and 21. Those are my targets. I want to not pay Social Security. The Federal Unemployment Tax Act, Chapter 23, was part of the original Social Security Act, so I've already nailed that. And it has the definition of citizen in 3306J. That this is the same definition as in FICA, Chapter 21, Social Security. same definition. An individual who is a citizen of the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico or the Virgin Islands, but not otherwise a citizen of the United States, shall, for the purposes of this chapter, be considered the citizen. It expressly excludes me if I'm the citizen they say I am. And no indictment that they bring is to collect Social Security. It's always just Chapter 1. So they know about this structure, and they never bring an indictment in relation to Social Security taxes. Now, in Chapter 2 of the tax code, we just disposed of 21 or 23, Chapter 2 has the same definition of citizen who is not a non-resident alien in Chapter 2. And I went through the whole tax code looking for references to Chapters 2 and 21, looking for phrases or statutory parameters that indicate I'm correct when I say this definition of citizen restricts the applicability of those that tax Social Security to citizens of possession. Section 7655 says for taxes imposed in the possession, see Chapters 2 and 21. 7651 parentheses 4A says if you're in the Virgin Islands and you look at Section 28A of the Revised Organic Act of the Virgin Islands, and it says any tax specified by 3811, they're really talking about Chapters 2 and 21. And so I know the 1939 tax code, Section 3811, collection of taxes in Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands, in 1954 was simply split up into Chapters 2 and 21. A statute just told me so. So what I've done is I've crafted this argument and briefed it, and I've been up against the government's best tax attorneys for years on paper, in pleading, for court. And what I've just done is proven that while they say I'm subject to Social Security and Chapter 1, what I've tried to do is say I'm not going to pay Social Security, I'm not that citizen, and I make that argument. And that leaves me with just Chapter 1 to analyze. So, first off, I'm not going to pay double chapter taxation. I'll pay one tax, not the other. Then I go to Chapter 1. Now that I've proven I don't have any concern over Social Security, it's always been theft, extortion, and racketeering. That's all it's ever been. And I sit in Chapter 1, and I go to the statutory definition of citizen, and I look in the table of contents, the index of the tax code, statute by statute, and there is no statutory definition of citizen in Chapter 1. At one point in time, they realized this, and so the Treasury wrote a regulation under Section 1 of the code, which is where we find the graduated income tax on married individuals, finally, jointly, separately, head of household, surviving spouse, single individual, trust, capital gains. And under Section 1, they said, who owes this tax? That's a regulation under Section 1, not a statute.
And this is 26 U.S. Code, folks, Section 1.
Yes, Tax Code, Section 1. And the graduated income tax, but it says there is hereby imposed upon the income of individuals. Well, that could be the individual in the definition of citizen in those other chapters. They have to be more specific than that. They name the subject of the tax by naming a citizen. In Section 1, there is no definition of citizen, and they put it in regulation only. And it says, who owes this tax? Citizens of the United States. Who's that? Any person born and naturalized in the United States and subject to its jurisdiction. Wherever they reside? Oh, yes, wherever they live. And that's all in one regulation, 26 CFR 1.1-1, A, B, and C. And you can't do that. They went beyond the language of the statute to create more than what is in the statute with a regulation, and you can't do that. It's called derogation of statute or overbreadth through regulation. A great case on this, probably the greatest, 2000, was FDA versus Brown and Williamson Tobacco Company. the tobacco company sued in district court saying the FDA had created its enforcement authority over tobacco through regulation alone, that if they had authority to regulate tobacco under statute, the Food and Drug Act itself would require that they ban the sale of tobacco tomorrow. And so they got all their authority through regulation, and district court said that's right, against the FDA. The FDA had to appeal it. The Fourth Circuit said that's right. And so the FDA appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, that's right. You created your regulation, your authority out of regulation alone. And so you have to shut that branch of the FDA down. And here I have an instance where they got all their authority over citizens of the United States, which I'm claiming to be just for the purposes of this argument. And I point out that, excuse me, but that's just a regulation. Do you have a statute?
Why don't you tell people what the difference between a regulation and a statute is?
I was just getting to the punchline, though.
Okay.
The 16th Amendment says Congress can lay and collect the tax. It has to be a statute. A regulation is written by the executive branch to implement the statute that Congress has enacted. And when they write a regulation, since they're not lawmakers, they're executive branch bureaucrats, they are not vested with the authority to broaden the law or to restrict the law. They have to reasonably and correctly interpret the language of the statute and bring it into enforcement by explaining it through regulation. And here's an instance where they looked at the law and they said, we need a definition of citizen because nothing in the tax code yet makes an American liable for the tax. And so they wrote the regulation. You can't do that. I have on the federal income taxation page of webgov.com an excerpt of 40 cases where people went into court saying, I'm a non-resident alien. You're the federal government. You're limited. It's Washington, D.C. I'm not over there. I'm over here. And the court said in 40 cases, wrong, here's Section 1 of the tax code that imposes the graduated income tax, and here's the regulation that says you're liable. In 40 cases, and in none of those cases did anybody say, excuse me, that's just a regulation. Instead, they say, wrong, I'm a non-resident alien. The judge says, well, that's fine, you're going to jail, or that's fine, you owe the money. And so I have them in 40 instances relying on that regulation to prove you owe the tax. It's just a regulation. So that's the first argument. I'm only named in a regulation if I'm a citizen of the United States, and you can't do that. It's a violation of the 16th Amendment that says Congress can lay and collect the tax.
Right.
So
let me just be clear to people so that we understand. So any office any department, any cabinet, et cetera, in the executive branch cannot make a law. This would, of course, exclude the notion of emergency statutes, etc. But as far as a legislative enactment of a law, the creating of a law, that cannot happen in the executive branch. The executive branch is specifically, and correct me if I'm wrong, David, the executive branch is, by its namesake, there to enforce what the legislature creates. The judicial is there, of course, to decide on that law, and the executive comes in to enforce what
precisely. The
judicial says. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll be back. Take our first break. Stay tuned, folks. More with David Burlum. We'll be back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Earthquakes, hurricanes, nuclear accidents, terror attacks, and all-out social collapse. With the world today more volatile than ever, the future has never looked more uncertain. Survivalist Magazine is the one resource you can't afford to be without. Claim your free trial subscription now at www.survivalist.com, and your first issue ships immediately. Get all the details and more at www.survivalist.com or order by phone. Call 1-866-437-6570. Your survival may depend on it.
Americans are reeling from Obamacare, higher prices, and an epidemic of policy lapses. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com has you covered. World-class medical and surgery at one of Asia's most modern hospitals. 300 doctors, surgeons, and dentists serving 300,000 patients a year. Fractions of U.S. prices. Friends or family forced to go out of pocket? Avoid bankruptcy. Tell them to run. Run like hell. Hit us up now. We'll show you how. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com.
Has your dancing and romancing done gone away? Are you moaning and a-groaning from the stresses of the day? Are you reeling and appealing because a headache's on the way? Well, relax for just a moment. Stress relief is on the way. Of what am I speaking, you ask? The essential oils of long historic use, the wisdom of the ages, the health care of the ancients, frankincense, myrrh, hyssop, and hundreds of others too numerous to mention. What could be more appealing? Do you know that Young Living essential oils is an element of life that makes them extremely effective in body rejuvenation? This element is called vibration, and it works with body systems, not against them. The professionals at Divine Living Oils have tested and been so impressed with this product that we are using them to help others. And who are we? We are health professionals with many years' experience. Trust us, we have seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. Our motto? Because we care about you. Do your health and spirit a great favor. Call us at 304-542-4226. That's 304-542-4226. Again, that's 304-542-4226.
With autumn in the air, it's time to think about getting ready for winter. And it's time to save at HerbalHealer.com. You'll find amazing seasonal savings to prepare you for the fight against cold and flu season. Like Oregacillin to promote lung health. 30 capsules, regularly $34.95, now only $25. HHA Olive Leaf, the natural antiviral, normally $16.95, now 60 capsules are just $12. HHA Elderberry Power, a great flu and virus fighter, regularly $16.95, 60 capsules, now $10. Save on all our homeopathic detoxes. Choose from lungs, kidney, liver, brain, libido, or whole body, normally $26.95, now just $20. Visit HerbalHealer.com and click on the Fall Winter Specials button to save on all our natural cold and flu fighting products. Also explore our Herbal Healer Academy correspondence courses that teach you how to handle your health naturally. HerbalHealer.com, healing the world with nature, one person at a time, since 1988.
Dr. Joel Wallach, author of the famous health lecture, Dead Doctors Don't Lie, presents his newest book, Epigenetics. Epigenetics is required reading for the very survival of Americans, and yes, all of humanity. Modern man has bet on the wrong horse to save them from disease and pestilence. The medical system has failed us fearfully. Join the health revolution. Buy Epigenetics today and receive a free membership to purchase all the products that Dr. Joel Wallach formulated at wholesale prices and receive a free CD of Dead Doctors Don't Lie. All this for only $25 plus shipping and handling. Call 888-311-4311. That's 888-311-4311. Again, that's just $25 plus shipping and handling. And you'll receive the new book, Epigenetics, a free membership and a free CD of Dead Doctors Don't Lie. Call 888-311-4311. That's 888-311-4311.
There's a battle ahead. Many battles are lost, but you'll never see the end of the road while you're traveling with me. Hey now, don't dream it's over.
All right, folks, welcome back. You're in the Corporation Nation. We're talking to David Merland. WEVGOV.com. That's WEVGOV.com. Really, really important information on the site. I'd like to switch gears here. Now, folks, you're probably familiar with David's commercial, which does air on this particular show, where it talks about Section 83A, to be specific, of the tax code. And so I'd really like to get into the heart of this, because what you've discovered, David, through some serious due diligence, and I commend you for that, is that there is a specific definition for income. And income is a funny word. Maybe we can start with that, because I was listening to a a previous interview with you, and you always have to define terms, folks, because remember, we're dealing with fiction here, so the words have to be defined. And you made the distinction with the word cost, which I wanted to ask you about, but you also said that gain, profit, income, three words that are basically the same thing. So when we're talking about the income tax, we're really talking essentially about the tax on profit. What the heck's going on here?
There are cases to this effect, and for anybody interested, an in-depth discussion about this that took up an entire two-hour radio show, I finally got an audience with Lowell Beecraft on Saturday, just 3 or 4 days ago, and for 2 hours, he and I, we didn't go back and forth, there was no disagreement, but we covered the topic of what is income and whether or not it's defined in the tax code. And anybody that's been around at all, your first few steps, you're going to hear the name Lowell Beecraft.
Mm.
And I had been exchanging emails with him for the last probably 3 months, and of course gave him briefings that I have for sale on wevgov.com. And he did say that he likes my argument, and that included the one we'd already outlined in the first segment. And
one of the things you hear all the time as well is that income is not defined, which is the point of your whole spiel on your commercial.
Correct. And if income is gain, if income is your profit, and case law says so, I think it's Eisner versus Macomber, makes it very clear that income is gain derived from. So how do you calculate gain or profit? In any business, you have two categories. What you bring in fits into one or the other, and they never share a penny. It is either cost or it is income. This is before accounting 101. It's that fundamental of a concept.
Well, so to be clear, just let me make sure that people understand and what's being said here. If I go to work, I have a full-time job at Walmart, and I trade my labor for what Walmart pays, which is very little. That's I'm not getting a gain or a profit from that. I'm trading my labor.
You're way down the road from where we really have to start, and that is with the concept that gain is what is left over after you've defined your cost. That concept follows you clear through what I'm about to outline. Your cost is defined in the tax code, and therefore income is defined in the tax code, because the definition of income is your cost. Your cost defines what is not your cost, and what is not your cost is gain. And so income is defined in the tax code, because your cost is defined in the tax code.
All right, now, so what is this word cost, then?
This word cost is cash or other property. That's a quote right out of Regulation 1.1012-1A. 1012 is called basis of property. The cost of property, the basis of property. The basis of property to buy is usually its cost. Only in rare and extraordinary circumstances will property be deemed to have no fair market value. The general principle of computing gain or loss is that when the transaction for the transfer of property is completed, the basis is to be restored to the taxpayer, and what remains constitutes the realized gain. That's right out of 1012 and 1001 implementing regulations. And so the definition of cost and the requirement that it be restored to you is in the tax code. And regulations under Section 83 tell you to apply 1012 to figure your cost. And when it says cash or other property, I don't see a provision that says, except labor. Labor is property. The Supreme Court says it's the most most sacred and inviolable property of man.
Good point.
And so you don't have a choice. Now, I mean, they don't have a choice. they have to consider all property as cost unless the law provides that they can simply not consider labor as a cost. So in Section 83, you have a statute that no one else in the country teaches. And that includes tax lawyers, criminal defense lawyers, H&R Block, Ronnie Deutsch, tax masters, your CPA, the company's accountant and payroll department. Nobody, the IRS doesn't even train on it. And yet, on the federal income taxation page of wevgov.com, you see all the case law is right there, excerpts from the case law that says Section 83 applies to all compensation. It explains how to tax it, and the government doesn't even train on it.
All right, well,
it's that wide open.
If everybody would like to see what he's talking about, you can just type in 26 U.S. Code Section 83, where it is titled, of an interesting title, it's property transferred in connection with performance of services. Now, when we say property transferred, there again, you're speaking of your labor, correct?
Well, no. It's transferred in connection with the performance of services. It's the paycheck. It's not the labor.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And so, in the strictest legal sense, an aggregate of rights. That's the definition of property out of Black's Law Dictionary. There's a phrase in the definition of property that says, in the strictest legal sense, an aggregate of rights. And so when they transfer rights to property to compensate you for your services, they have given you property transferred in connection with the performance of services, haven't they? That's the name of Section 83. And you don't have to go necessarily to Cornell Law School University's website, which is the first link that pops up whenever you do a search for a statute. Instead, you can go to wevgov.com, and at the bottom of the federal income taxation page is this, an outline of this argument, Section 83. And you'll find the text of Section 83, you'll find the case law about Section 83, and you'll find even an excerpt from Revenue Ruling 2007-19, where in 2007, IRS General Counsel says Section 83 provides for the determination of what is to be included in gross income when property is transferred to an employee or independent contractor. Now, if you digress and forget that I even have an interpretation of Section 83 of my own, forget it. It's a statute, American. If you're an adult, if you have civic duty tendencies at all, and if you're an American, it's one paragraph. That's all it is. And all the courts say it explains how to tax your paycheck. I don't have a choice. You don't have a choice. The IRS doesn't have a choice. Nobody has a choice. The DOJ doesn't have a choice. The courts don't have a choice. They have to apply it. They have to comply with it. What's so scary about one paragraph? It's a forgotten paragraph. My book on Section 83 is called Codebreaker, the Section 83 Equation, America's Forgotten Paragraph. And nobody applies it. And yet, and I told you my work was done in 1994, I'm looking at the 1993 version of IRS Publication 17. It's the blue and white book they send out to every household in the United States. And I'm looking at page 117 of that 1993 edition, part 14 of the publication, which is about the basis of property. And right in the middle of the page, it says cost basis. The basis of property you buy is usually its cost. The cost is the amount of cash and debt obligations you pay for it and the fair market value of other property or services you provide in the transaction. It just told me my cost is the value of services I provide in the transaction. I started using this as an exhibit, along with the 1994 and eventually the 1995 edition. And what they did, there's 1993, and I'm scrolling in the 1994, and they amend They say the same thing in the 1994 edition of that publication on page 118. And then in 1995, because of my use of those as an exhibit, they changed it. They amended publication 17, so in 1995, it now reads in the same spot, the basis of property you buy is usually its cost. The cost is the amount you pay in cash or debt obligations or in other property, just like it says in 1.1012-1A. So they went from quoting 1.83-3G, definition of amount paid, to quoting the definition of amount paid in 1012, cash or other property. So I can track the success of my litigation through their amendment of publication 17. They had to get away from that phrase that you find in regulation when section 83 says only the excess over the amount paid is gross income. Regulation defines the amount paid as the value of any money or property paid. Well, the value of labor is everything an unrelated party is willing to give me for it. That includes my pension, my vacation pay, my sick pay, wages, salaries, tips, commissions, my free parking spot the company gives me, the per diem stipend if they pay me to go out of town on company business and pay for the hotel and the meals that I have to eat, whatever I get from my employer in connection with the performance of business or services under contract is my fair market value. It's my contract value. Same thing. And only the excess over that amount is gross income. Dave, you sold more vacuum cleaners than anybody else in the country in this quarter for the whole company. We're really impressed. Here's a $4,000 bonus. I didn't contract for that, did I? It's over and above the value of my labor.
You just had a gain, a profit, an income.
You see how that happened? It was outside my contract.
Yep.
Okay, so Section 83A, back to the language of it, which you'll see right at the bottom of the website, the federal income taxation page, it says that if in connection with the performance of services property is transferred, the excess of the value of that property or paycheck shall over the amount paid shall be included in gross income. I didn't have anything over that amount paid. And so suddenly, the definition of cost that honors all property as a cost has protected as my private property my services. And my argument in the 90s, five trips all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, was where's your authority to exclude labor from any money or property? And they couldn't come up with the authority. Any is all inclusive. It includes everything unless the law provides for an exception. And the only argument they ever had against this was that you didn't buy your labor before you sold it. And so everything you sold it for is a profit because you have no cost in your labor. And I kept pressing the point, where is your authority to exclude labor simply because it's property I didn't purchase first? The law says the value of any money or property that I paid. And they can't answer the question. And now, this is as of 2003, I have four U.S. Supreme Court cases that the government won in the Supreme Court saying the term any is all-inclusive, and unless you can point to a law that allows you to exclude some property from any property, you have to interpret it as all-inclusive of all property. So the government wins Supreme Court cases arguing the same way that I lost in tax court cases, arguing Section 83. So I revised the brief to include those four U.S. Supreme Court decisions, and in January 2006, New Year's 2006, I filed a complaint with 80 members of Congress, nearly 80, on three committees, including Ron Paul, the Committee on Government Reform, the Joint Committee on Taxation, and the House Judiciary Committee. It cost me $6,000 to send each one of those people 180 pages, and that... It, and we're getting really to the meat of this. This is where my findings are implemented to apply to individuals' tax cases. If we leave just those two arguments, I have other arguments that were briefed in the 58-page memorandum that supported that criminal complaint I filed with Congress. but I wrote a 33-page racketeering and extortion complaint based on the presumption that I'm correct because they can't refute the damn thing. And a 58-page memorandum that brings the heaviest lifting arguments from my 1994 treatise to bear, and a few exhibits attached to it, and filed that with all those members of Congress. And now what I see, after 2006, I was helping people become co-complainants. If they observe my conclusions, read my memorandum, and feel that, yeah, the law is being broken, all right, well, why don't you let me help you report that violation of the law to Congress, and we'll write up an affidavit of joinder, give that to this client, and the client prints out several copies of it, gets them all blue notary signature and sealed, and sends them back to our office, and we follow the congressional protocol for mail distribution put in place after the anthrax letters of 2001, and send them a postal money order that they require that you pay them for distribution through their mail setup that they have. It's never more than a dollar a piece for the.
And have you ever had a response?
No, not from Congress. However,
not from Ron Paul either, huh? Tell you what, folks, we'll be right back. We take a quick break. Stay tuned.
Woo, nice shooting. Hey, that's a sweet AK-47 chest rig. Is that multicam?
Yep, got it from StrikeHardGear.com.
Strike what?
StrikeHardGear.com.
Set your sights on StrikeHardGear.com. Tough, tactical gear for your Soviet-style weapon that's made in the USA. Affordable, plus a no-questions-asked 30-day money-back guarantee and lifetime replacement warranty. StrikeHardGear.com. Go ahead, pull the trigger.
The IRS is a private corporation, not a government agency. Income tax is collected by voluntary compliance. To learn to unvolunteer or discontinue volunteering into the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com and immediately implement Strategy 1. The process must be repeated each and every time. Paper, letter, envelope, presentment, etc. Always and forever. Failure equates to acceptance, subsequent resultant contract, and you pay or go to jail by your own consent and agreement contract. Avoid recontracting. Visit escapeharassment.com and implement Strategy 1 immediately. Bar lawyers and accountants won't help you. Why wait? Get Strategy 1 and immediately implement it to divorce the IRS today and forever. That's escapeharassment.com, Strategy 1, to be free from the IRS. escapeharassment.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here is what people are saying.
I have a testimony about how wonderful heart drops are. I ended up at Mayo Clinic, just had an awful time with angina and related problems to my heart problem. I remembered that I'd run out of heart drops and had reordered. And when I started taking them again, all these problems went away. And I just want to say how great these heart drops are. I'd recommend them to anyone.
Like, I had my last heart attack in August, and I was having some form of angina pain pretty well every day. And then since I started taking it, I haven't had any angina pain at all. You know, I'm satisfied.
To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hi, my name is David Merlin from TakeFromCaesar.us. Income is defined in the tax code. All property is a cost, including labor, according to statute. You're deprived of the provisions of Section 83 whenever you pay an income tax on your compensation. According to Section 83, only the excess over the amount paid is gross income. The government can't so much as provide an interpretation of Section 83 of its own. Get your paradigm shift and understanding today at TakeFromCaesar.us.
It is like a finger pointing away to the moon. Don't concentrate on the finger or you will miss all that heavenly glory.
Empty your mind. be formless, shapeless, like water. Water, water, like water, like water, like water. Water can flow, or it can crash. Be water, my friend.
All right. Another little U.S. code you might be interested in, folks, which really has a lot to do with what David is telling us here, is U.S. code Title 18. Section 4, which we've talked about this before. Misprision of felony. There's also another code that's misprision of treason. I accused our attorney general here in Utah, Shurtleff, who is now in jail for fraud, I'm happy to say. I actually got accused him of this on film back in my guerrilla media days, and he was not very happy about that. But misprision of felony in Section 4 of Title 18 says, whoever, having knowledge of the actual commission of a felony cognizable by a court of the United States, conceals and does not as soon as possible make known the same to some judge or other person in civil or military authority under the United States, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years, or both. So, really, in your little, quite big brief here, you're actually informing the government that there is a bit of felony going on in the ranks of the executive thing that we call the IRS, and that they're actually trying to legally steal from the people through the tax code, and so you're simply just informing government that there's a bit of crime going on, aren't you?
Yeah, for a couple of reasons, and if I could just put a cap on this affidavit of joinder concept that we left off with, when the complaint that I filed, an affidavit of joinder makes you a co-complainant, and it makes my complaint your complaint, where you can say, I complained to Congress too. I joined the complaint. I'm a co-complainant on this criminal complaint. I'm required to report crime under 18 U.S.C. 4. That's what I'm doing. And now you photocopy that complaint and the supplemental briefing I filed August 27th of last year to bring it up to date. And you serve anybody that says you owe this tax under the Internal Revenue Code with a copy of all that and a cover letter saying, excuse me, I'm only named in a regulation, and you've deprived me of Section 83 in your calculation of my taxes. Prove that you haven't. I'd like to see everything you got on Section 83. And they'll say we have nothing responsive to that request, even under the Freedom of Information Act. And the reason I did this was severalfold. In March 2005, a guy from Texas contacted me and said, I might be indicted for failure to file. I just heard your name. I don't know what you do. Tell me a little bit about it. And I said, how would you like an exhibit that proves that you sued the United States for proof that the tax code applies to Americans and I can't debate you on 3 or 4 statutes? He said, let's go for it. So I wrote him up a lawsuit under Rule 27, action to perpetuate testimony, just to get discovery rights. That's all it's for. And he sued the United States in U.S. District Court, Austin, Texas. And the lawsuit included a briefing of 3 particular issues, including the one we outlined first, which was I'm only named in a regulation. And instead of disproving the argument, there was 3 briefed issues, and under each issue there's questions presented for review they have to answer to prove the argument incorrect. And there's 3, 4, and 5 questions, a total of 12 questions, and instead of answering the questions to disprove the findings, U.S. Attorney Stephen Bass asked for a protective order against the question.
Oh, dude, hold that thought. We'll talk about the protective order after we get back. That's funny, actually. Stay tuned, folks.
With financial